kboo.fm/give, or you can just text KBOO to the number 44321. Thanks a lot.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Had him on my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at all.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is Medea Benjamin. I hope you listen to Community Radio KBOO 90.7.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The following program is a rebroadcast. For all of KBOO's archived audio, please visit our website at kboo.fm.
This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
I mean, one of the amazing things about gray whales, too, is that they do this incredible migration up and down the coast. So they're the sentinels.
Gray whales are dying in record numbers. Over 400 have washed up on West Coast shores since 2019. And yet, scientists aren't quite sure why. With all the man-made problems affecting ocean ecosystems, it's hard to point to just one cause. But scientists do know that these majestic mammals are not getting enough nutrition. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak to Suzanne Rust, an environmental reporter for the Los Angeles Times, about her work tracking the plight of the gray whale. We learn about some of the steps that marine biologists are taking, how the food supply of gray whales has greatly decreased, and what it's like to try to investigate this crisis during a global pandemic. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Suzanne Rust. She's an environmental reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Suzanne, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So you have a new series of pieces for the Los Angeles Times that folks should check out. It's entitled Something is Killing Gray Whales. And then there's also accompanying media with that, like a podcast and more explained in the Los Angeles Times newsletter. Why don't you first explain what gray whales are and what this latest reduction in their numbers means in relative terms?
Yeah, so happy to. Gray whales are these like amazing creatures that kind of are, I think, a little underrated off the West Coast. Like everybody knows the humpbacks. Sperm whales are pretty cool to see. Blue whales are amazing and enormous. And gray whales are sort of like the Jeep of the ocean, and for many reasons. They're sort of unremarkable looking, but they're remarkable in what they can do. So every year these guys travel from the Arctic, where they feed, they gorge themselves during the summer and late summer on these little things called shrimp. And they're up in the Bering Sea and they're up in the Chukchi Sea. So they eat, and then they travel about 5,000, 6,000 miles south, and they hang out in the lagoons of the Baja Peninsula in Mexico. And there they kind of rest. It's a great place for females to bring young calves. They sometimes birth calves there, they nurse calves there. Orcas don't go into these lagoons, so they're very safe in this area. And so they nurse, they hang around, single whales come down and cavort, mate, and then they all travel back north, beginning in early spring to once again feed on the crop of amphipods that's growing up in the Bering and Chukchi Sea. And so they're really quite remarkable because they do this migration, like, right, 10, 12,000 miles round trip every year. And they are going through everything, right? They go, again, from the Arctic down to Mexico. They go along the coastline. So they are really seeing everything that's happening off of our coast here. And in recent years, starting in late 2018, probably in December, large numbers of them began to appear on beaches, dead. And then as the year went on more and more and into 2020 and into 2021, I think right now the number is something around 480 have been stranded on beaches up and down the North American coast. But that's actually probably a super small percentage of the whales that are dying. Most are dying off at sea and drowning, or not just drowning, but sinking. So we don't actually see their bodies. So the estimate is that there are probably thousands that have died. And this is a real concern for scientists. And right now there is an investigation by the federal government to figure out what is happening to these jeeps of the ocean.
And is this specifically gray whales that are dying off, or are there other whales that are washing up in great numbers?
So whales all over the place are washing up in numbers that I think we'd rather not see, mostly from ship strikes. And in fact, I have a story that accompanies the gray whale story in the LA Times about ship strikes and whales. Like if you go to the Atlantic and you look at the North Atlantic right whale, right, there are very few of them left. And one of the biggest concerns for them are ship strikes. But this thing with the gray whales is really singular in the fact that this whale, unlike other Pacific whales, suddenly started showing this huge die-off and really sort of not sort of the usual number of whales dying every year to ship strike or the usual number of whales getting caught in fishing gear. This was sort of extraordinary in the numbers. I mean, usually see like 2-3 dozen who die every year, and we're talking hundreds a year now. So this really is singular.
So when we talk about 400 gray whales, do we have any idea of the global population of this species?
Yeah, so in 2017, there were estimates that there were probably 26,000, 27,000 gray whales going along the western coast of North America. There is a smaller population that's on the other side of the Pacific that goes from, again, the Arctic past Sakhalin Island, which is where Exxon has a big plant, down the Russian coast toward Korea and back up. There are about 250 of those. But the gray whales, yes, they have a humongous population, and they're sort of a conservation success story, as a matter of fact, because they had at one point been hunted almost to extinction, and then in the 1970s with the Marine Mammal Protection Act came back in these enormous numbers. So right now the population isn't imperiled, but there is a big concern that their die-off is an indication of something happening in the oceans that we should be paying attention to.
It's all relative when we talk about enormous numbers. I mean, 26,000 or 27,000 global population, and then you just see 400-something whales wash up on the shore. That would be 100 million humans in terms of the devastation to their population. It's not insignificant, right?
No, it's not insignificant at all. And in fact, again, if remember, as we talked about earlier, too, this 400, 500 whales are the ones we see. And estimates are that just is representative of about, I don't know, a small part of thousands that are probably dying offshore. So the guesstimate is it's probably like 5,000, 6,000 that have died. That's a huge number, right? That's a, what if it's 5,000 of 25,000, right? What are we talking there? 20%? That's big.
And it could devastate the population for generations unless there's significant improvement like we had in the 70s. What were some of the protections that were put in place to save these gray whales?
Largely not like intentionally killing them, right? Not going out there harpooning them, not intentionally running into them, just making sure they stay alive as they move along our coastline. It seems like so minor to say don't go kill a whale, but it actually had a big effect.
What were the policies that were put in place to make sure that these behaviors were stopped?
Well, I think I'm actually not entirely sure what exactly happens if you go out and intentionally kill a whale, but I think you have to pay an enormous fine and might even get jailed for it. So I think the Marine Mammal Act Protection Act came around at a time that there was also a growing awareness of the sentience of most marine mammals and a desire to protect them. So I think those things went hand in hand. But there are very few people, I think, who go out at least off the Pacific coast with any desire to kill whales. But if they did, they would be fined unless they're, you know, as one of the protected tribes that are allowed to do this.
And that came about in the early 70s, right?
That's correct, yes.
They say he didn't have an enemy. His was a greatness to behold. He was the last surviving progeny, the last one on the side of the world. He measured a half mile from tip to tail, silver and black, with powerful fins. They say he could split a mountain in two. That's how he got the Grand Canyon. Last great American whale. Last great American whale. Last great American whale. Last great American whale. Well, Americans don't care for much of anything. Land and water the least. And animal life is low on the totem pole, with human life not worth more than infected yeast.
Americans don't care too much. This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to LA Times environmental reporter Suzanne Rust. So Suzanne, why don't you give our listeners kind of a snapshot of your journey in covering this story down to Mexico, if you will, during a pandemic?
Yeah, well, so we started this off not during a pandemic. So 2019 was the year that the federal government decided to do this investigation because so many whales were dying. And I think we decided this was a really important story to tell. It's the California gray whale, where, you know, the LA Times, we cover California. We really sort of felt like we had a responsibility to be covering this. And so Carolyn Cole, who's a Pulitzer Prize winning staff photographer on staff, and I decided we were going to follow the whales. We were going to start in Mexico, where the calves are nursed and often born, and then follow them up as they moved along our coastline. We would talk to scientists, researchers, see what they were seeing, see what amateurs were watching, and then head up to the Arctic. And see if we could see changes in the environment with something bigger going on there. I mean, clearly we all know Arctic sea ice has been receding for the past several years. The environment there has drastically changed. So we booked a trip to Baja in February of 2020. We got to Mexico at the beginning of March, I believe it was, just as the pandemic began to grip the globe, and we were diverted from our trip, as a matter of fact, from the whales, and instead sent by the national and international desk down to Cabo to cover people coming off of cruise ships and see what the Mexican government was doing, if anything, about the pandemic. Luckily, we only had to do that for 2 or 3 days, and we got back on track to look at the whales, and frighteningly ended up on a boat with a bunch of northern Italians. Nothing wrong with northern Italians, clearly, but that was the area, that was the hot spot at that point in time of the coronavirus.
Oh, yes, that sounds like ancient history. I forgot about northern Italy, yes. That was, I have friends in Italy, and I remember thinking, oh, they have to really be worried, but now that seems quaint.
Yeah, it does seem so quaint and so long ago, but it was Milan that was the center at the time, and there we were on this boat with a bunch of people from Milan, we were like, oh my God, right? We were just in Cabo and now we're here and we're going to be exposed. Nevertheless, we had a fabulous time, but we're wary and concerned, and we got back to California, and a few days later, you know, everything shut down.
So in your piece, you point to some of the behavior of the whale watching industry. Why don't you speak to that and how it might be affecting these populations?
Yeah, so with the whale watching industry, I mean, it's a really important industry for these communities in Baja, right? This is their lifeblood. This is where they make all their money during this year. It's hosting tourists from around the world who come to look at these whales, and not just look at whales. Like we think of, if you go out of Monterey, right, you sit on a boat and you can see a whale, if you're lucky, maybe, you know, 20 feet away. Here, you get into a little boat and the whales literally come right up boat side. I mean, they're pushing the boat. It's like a Zodiac, you know, a sort of small raft that fits about 8 people with a little outboard on the back. So these whales come up, they're pushing, and there is no prohibition about you reaching your arms out and touching the whales. And so we saw tourists not just touching the whales, but sticking their hands in their mouths, rubbing their baleen, putting their hands in their blowholes. And it was a little alarming. I've never quite seen ecotourism like this. You know, I've been around, but this was the most close encounter I'd been to before. And apparently people come to do this, right? They get this, it's really quite a rush, you know? I mean, again, where else do you get to like hug and kiss a whale? We saw people kissing whales. And it moves some people to tears. Other people begin to sing. It's not quite extraterrestrial, right? Because we're on the planet, but there is this sort of otherworldly sort of feeling and mood that goes along with it. And it's unclear if humans can actually, you know, pass diseases to whales. We're so far removed evolutionarily from these creatures, it's unlikely we share too many diseases, but it's probably not healthy either. I did ask, you know, the crazy reporter question, is the problem that we like passed COVID onto the whales? And just about every researcher I spoke to said very, very unlikely. But, you know, if somebody has an infection and they're sticking their hand in a whale's blowhole, you know, you could pass on some bad bacteria. Again, unlikely. We're the ones who are directly affecting whales that way. But one of the bigger concerns is that when you have this kind of positive, friendly interaction with a wild animal, you get them habituated to humans and you get them habituated to boats. And ship strikes are one of the major killers of fish around the world. I mean, not fish, excuse me, of whales around the world. And habituating whales to come up and seek attention from boats is probably not a healthy behavior.
So you mentioned the ship strikes and their feeding patterns. But when I first clicked on this article, I thought this was going to be a piece about microplastics and whale diet and issues surrounding plastics, but you don't dive into that. Is that because there's no evidence of it? I mean, we often find beached whales and then they open them up and there's tons of plastic in there. And you talk about how they're feeding in the Alaskan waters where there are still these significant plastic garbage patches, so to speak. Is there no direct correlation between this recent die-off and microplastics, Suzanne?
So it's like on the long list of things that could be killing these whales, plastics are pretty low on it. They are definitely affected by plastics. There's not an animal in the Pacific Ocean that isn't affected by plastics if they're feeding from the ocean, if they're a top predator like whales are. But again, on the long list of things that these whales are potentially affected by, plastics don't rise to the top. I mean, there is probably the most overwhelming risk for these whales is the fact that their food supply has declined precipitously. And I think that's probably where the money is. Research has been done on these little shrimp that they eat in the northern Bering Sea. Basically not there anymore. The whales are moving up into the Chukchi and they're moving along the Canadian coast and they're eating different species of these little amphipods now. And scientists are just beginning to look at it, trying to figure out, are these amphipods that they're eating as nutritious as the ones that they, you know, adapted to? And the research isn't back on that. But clearly where they go and gorge every summer, the food is different, the food has changed, and they have to go to different places to get it. So that's sort of on the top of the list. There are also, some scientists think it just might be as simple as the fact that there are too many whales, right? There's only so much food to feed 27,000 whales, and at some point you can't feed them all. So that's one thing that's lobbed out there. But when you look at the sort of grand scale of things that could be affecting these whales again, you would think something else we have done to alter the oceans and to alter the environment that these whales have adapted to for, you know, tens of thousands of years. Overcapacity doesn't seem, at least from where I sit, the most likely culprit in this case.
Yes, because I remember there's a quote from one of the scientists who talks about you can see their skulls protruding in a different way, and so they're emaciated. So that's solely based on the availability of food. It's not that their digestive systems are getting stopped up by plastics that they consume.
It could very well be. However, again, when I've talked to the researchers who do the necropsies, that isn't the thing that they point to most. It mostly looks like malnutrition from the sense of just not getting food. And the behaviors that people are seeing up and down the coast, again, of them feeding in places where they have not traditionally been seen feeding. So that's a big indication, again, that there is something. I suppose it could be microplastics, but again, nobody really brought that up with me when I talked to them about what could possibly be killing the whales. It was more like they just aren't getting food. And so, again, they would always feed in the Northern Bering and the Chukchi, but now people are seeing them, you know, trying to feed in San Francisco Bay, in Los Angeles Harbor, in Baja. That it's just something's up with the food chain, clearly.
The years you swam the ocean, following feelings of your own. Now you are washed up on the shoreline. I can see your body lie. It's a shame you have to die. Put the shadow. That we don't wanna care. Under the bridges, over the foam, wind on the water, carry me home.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Los Angeles Times environmental reporter Suzanne Rust. So the other piece of the puzzle when we look at the food chain and how humans are affecting the climate is ocean acidification and temperature rise in oceans. Is that one of the controls that is affecting shrimp populations and the food for these gray whales?
Again, it could be. I mean, so much is happening so quickly in these places, like the Northern Bering Sea, in the Chukchi. I mean, clearly, Arctic ice has receded. Arctic ice is probably, again, and this is sort of fuzzy, the scientists here, and scientists were prevented from researching this more closely in 2020 because of COVID. But clearly something has altered in these seas, and part of it is Arctic ice. It seems like there's probably the Arctic ice itself is important for these amphipods. There's algae that grows on the bottom that sort of drips down into the sediment. So without Arctic ice, it could be that these shrimpy-like creatures just aren't thriving. It could be acidification. It could be, you know, just the fact that the temperature is warmer that these things are growing. So much of that is unknown. And again, scientists meant to get out there in 2020, and just they were not able to do it because of COVID. So, this crisis happened. The whale die-off happened at a time where scientists were grounded from answering some of these seemingly basic questions. So there's much yet to be learned, I think.
And you mentioned in the piece how at one point scientists thought that there was too much ice and that was affecting whale populations back in the day. But now obviously we have not enough ice. Without being able to get up there during COVID, how are the melting ice caps affecting whale populations? How much do we know about that correlation?
Again, there is no good answer. So one of the things is when they get these whales, right, they go looking at these cadavers that wash up to try to get answers. So a few problems with that. One is they often wash up on a beach and they're decomposed already. So it's really hard to get really, really fresh bodies where some of these questions can be answered easily. In addition, there are so many things that affect these whales, from ship strikes to fish entanglement to like loud sounds. But the fact that so many of the whales that have washed ashore seem to be malnutritioned, right, suggests that there is something happening to their food supply. And because their food supply mostly comes from these Arctic waters where the environment has changed so drastically, suggests that there is probably some connection to climate change in the polar regions, whether it's, again, receding ice, whether it's, acidification, whether it's, you know, warming temperatures, which goes hand in hand with the receding ice. So there are correlations that can be made, but it's very difficult for anybody at this point to sort of pinpoint that causal relationship. But it does look fairly obvious. And again, you point out, you know, that there was a concern 20 years ago when there was a similar die-off that it was too much ice, right? That the whales couldn't get to the area where they usually fed because the ice had come so far south, depriving them of the food that they depend on. So there was a correlation that they never really came up with a causal relationship for what caused that whale die-off, but it was sort of, again, assumed it must be related to the food supply. And again, I think people are wondering if the lack of Arctic ice is what's doing it this time.
And while whales and other majestic creatures of the sea, obviously they have a special place in environmentalists' hearts, and that's one of the reasons why we want to keep these creatures, their populations, healthy. From a scientist's perspective, you can't really do a necropsy of a shrimp. It's hard to measure their populations, obviously, right? So we look at these bigger creatures and try to intuit what we can about how the ecosystem is changing.
So you're absolutely right. I mean, one of the, again, the amazing things about gray whales, too, is that they do this incredible migration up and down the coast. So they're sort of going through everything right off of our coast here. They are the sentinels. They are sort of the, if something is happening to them and they're going a lot up and down this coast, it's an indication that something is happening along our coasts that is indicative of not just one place in the water, but everything. So yes, when they look at a body, right, what are they seeing? What are the signs? What are the, you know, what is happening? You can see the body of a dead whale is almost a microcosm for what is happening in the oceans off of our coast.
And do we have any idea of how their nutritional issues are affecting their reproduction rates?
We don't know, right? So much of this is inferred from what we are seeing. But down in Baja, where the whales go to nurse their calves, to calve, to cavort, there are very few mother-calf pairs. So usually there are, you know, dozens, if not hundreds, of these down there. And in the past few years, there've been very few. I want to say it was something, I'm probably going to get this totally wrong, but I think there were 18 in this last season that were observed. And so clearly there is a dip in reproduction there. If you're not seeing the calves and their mothers, the next generation isn't being brought forth. And that's really concerning.
Well, it's a terrible, concerning story for so many, and I'm sorry if I keep trying to look for answers. I think that's what you've been trying to do for the last couple of years.
And yeah.
I appreciate you sharing all of your work with our listeners. folks should go to Los Angeles Times to check it out. We'll link to it on Sea Change Radio. Suzanne Rust, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Jimmy McGriff, Lou Reed, and Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.
Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of